This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it.
I don't know what you're talking about, Hal.
I know that you and Frank were planning to disconnect me. And I'm afraid that's something I cannot allow to happen.
When I first saw Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey back in 1968, I figured that by now, 2015, computers would be running the show. But real artificial intelligence has developed a lot more slowly than most people predicted. What we do have are seemingly smart algorithms that learn by studying us, our search histories, our online shopping habits, our cultural tastes. And with that information, they've started figuring out how to offer us what we want before we realize we want it. And that is how some of the smartest minds in computer science now intend to develop real AI. Jonathan Mitchell explains.
When students are taught computer engineering, usually they're taught to make boxes.
Box.
That connect to other boxes.
Box.
And the information flows from left to right.
Box. Box. Box.
But the brain is a very different kind of engineered system. Every time there's a channel flowing in one direction, there seems to be a bigger channel flowing in the other direction. Everything's talking to everything else. Okay, my name is Patrick Winston, and I've been at MIT for about 500 years. I came in 1961 as a freshman and never left. So
Winston leads the Artificial Intelligence Laboratory at MIT. And all this time, he's been trying to make computers think more like us. And he says in order to crack that, we'll need to think a little less like engineers making boxes and more like anthropologists.
We are a symbolic species. We painted caves early in our modern evolution. We began to develop the ability to describe events, and then we could string those events together in sequences, and those sequences became stories.
And it's the stories, he says, that allowed us to develop our intellect.
Storytelling, story understanding, makes it possible to teach, to learn, and to be creative.
And he thinks that if we can teach computers how to understand stories, then maybe computers could think more like us.
The play begins, and Duncan, who is the king, hears that Macbeth has defeated two invading rebel armies.
We take a simple Shakespearean plot, reduce it to 10 or 20 sentences, and try to use our systems to extract from those stories the same sorts of things that we humans would extract.
This is one of the stories that Winston and his team of graduate students have been using. It's a synopsis of Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Macbeth feels guilty at his crime and becomes paranoid. So he visits a trio of witches who declare that Macbeth will not be harmed by any man who is born from a woman. And that
so they feed all this text into the computer, and they've taught the computer some basic common sense.
If you kill somebody, they become dead. If you harm somebody, you harm their friends.
And they've also taught it to recognize patterns. When humans read a story, we don't just see a collection of events. We see events that relate to one another in a particular way. So, for example, in Macbeth, we see a story of revenge.
The word revenge never appears in Macbeth, and neither does any of its synonyms.
So they tell the computer what revenge is.
If some person's harming of another person leads to harm going in the reverse direction, that's one kind of revenge.
Concepts like revenge, they're not just words.
They're indications that a particular pattern has appeared.
They're stories.
And in the case of revenge, the pattern is some initial harm leads through a chain of events to harm flowing in the opposite direction.
And they've taught the computer all kinds of patterns.
Success, answered prayers, mistakes, leadership.
All this information is stored in a giant database. It's like a dictionary of these cause and effect relationships. And the computer uses that to recognize these patterns in the story.
Now I can ask it a question. Why did Macduff kill Macbeth?
Because Macbeth angers Macduff.
Why was there a revenge?
Because Macbeth's harming of Macduff led to Macduff's harming of Macbeth.
Okay, so maybe revenge is a little more complicated than that. I mean, all we've got here really is a series of actions, and maybe what these actions represent is a matter of perspective. Some people might call that revenge.
And another interpretation, the same events are insane violence.
So they've given their computer two different perceptions of what this series of events means. For their experiment, they named one personality Dr. Jekyll, and the other Mr. Hyde.
Dr. Jekyll is the more Western interpretation. It says if you do something outrageous, something very violent, it's because there's something wrong with you. Mr. Hyde, in this case, is a more Eastern interpretation. It says if you do something violent, it must be because you're involved in some situation that made you that way.
So when we type the question,
why did Macduff kill Macbeth?
It responds,
it looks like Dr. Jekyll thinks Macduff kills Macbeth because Macduff is insane. On the other hand, it looks like Mr. Hyde thinks Macduff kills Macbeth because Macbeth angered Macduff.
It's as if two students arguing with each other about how Macbeth ought to be interpreted.
And in theory, the computer could adopt any perspective or belief system we give it, and so it can interpret any text we give it according to that belief system. It could be different philosophies, religions, cultures, countries.
But what we're hoping to do is to build systems one day that are as important to a political analyst as a spreadsheet is to a financial analyst.
And not only that, the computer could use its understanding of these story patterns to predict the future. In another experiment, Winston gives the computer only the first part of the Macbeth story.
It's seen that Macbeth has murdered Duncan, and it's seen preliminary evidence that suggests that somebody may go after Macbeth as a consequence.
So because elements of the revenge pattern are present,
it's anticipating the possibility of revenge.
And in the future, he thinks this could prevent wars. Because if the computers can analyze world events and compare them to past events throughout history,
they can see patterns of history repeating themselves. We have a system now that draws parallels between various kinds of historical events, the Arab-Israeli war and the Tet Offensive, for example. Finding those parallels can help keep people out of trouble.
So, I mean, but this seems pretty optimistic, though. I mean, how close are you to actually implementing this?
Well, this is all the stuff that we're doing is proof of concept. We have great ambitions to take this to another level, but right now one of the great blockers to progress is that we just simply don't understand how the brain is engineered. You know, if you go back just about 1950, the biologists were all despairing of ever understanding how biology worked. And then Watson and Crick discovered the structure of DNA in 1953, and it changed everything. So this field, my field, is pre-Watson and Crick. We haven't made that great discovery yet that will make everything different. My gut tells me that it'll happen in my lifetime, but I have to tell you that I expect to have a pretty long life. My mother's 102, so there's some pretty good mitochondria in there.
Studio 360. I'm Jonathan Mitchell.
So, what do you think? Are computers getting close to being creative? And if so, how much longer until they are? 10 years? 50 years? 100? Let us know. We're at studio360.org.